Today's show presented by Prime Video. TV ratings keep going up. Can anyone stop UConn or Purdue? Old school wrestling references. Caitlin Clark to sensation. And we've got some tales of police pursuits in New Mexico and Florida.
Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Like Caitlin Clark's on TV, and these two, you know, the Applebee guy that they probably went to eat at every Tuesday night anyway. It's like, hey, you guys should come back. I'll give you a grand.
All right. Yeah, fair.
Free chicken wings and some steak and ribs or whatever. I'll have it. And all of a sudden, half of Raleigh shows up. Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it.
Ross Dellinger.
She is doing exactly what NIL in college was kind of made for. And that is to earn the money while you're kind of at your peak in college athletics.
And SI's Pat Forty.
One thing we know, there's going to be massive complaining about the officiating. And everybody's going to say Zach Edey's getting all the calls. The fact is, he earns almost all the calls he gets.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod presented by Prime Video. And I know this is a little bit of a repeat topic from last week, but these TV ratings for the college basketball tournament are sizable.
Indeed.
Biggest non-NFL or non-college football playoff ratings for pretty much anything all year. 15 million tuned in to watch Duke and NC State. And DJ Burns Jr., great American. Mm-hmm. 12.3 million tuned in Monday to watch LSU and Iowa in the showdown. Needless to say, record for women's basketball tournament of all time. But that's bigger than, I think that was bigger than almost any college football game other than, I guess there was Ohio State, Michigan also.
I think Ohio State, Michigan, and like the SEC championship game, I think were the only two that
were. That was it. Okay. So it wasn't all college football playoff, but basically that's it. So, massive number. So let's go with either one. You can pick either one, I guess, to discuss. I mean, I think the LSU-Iowa thing, obviously rematch last year's national title game. Caitlin Clark is a phenomenon at this point. I've never heard so much women's basketball, just casual conversation. Everyone's watching that. And then I don't know whether Duke NC State is, you know, look, it's Easter and Duke's losing. I mean, like, hey, everyone's happy. Or there's something else. How much is gambling playing into this? I know we discussed it last week, but these numbers just keep getting bigger and bigger. I don't think anyone thought they would get this big. Maybe a Caitlin Clark. Iowa UConn on Friday night. I don't know. I don't know what number that thing could throw. Friday's not as good as Monday's, but I think this going to be pretty big. Pat, what's going on?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It really is. And especially on the men's side, when the narrative, which I hate that word, but it was that, there's really nothing to latch on to. There's not enough interesting guys or interesting teams or whatever. But people are watching. The Duke NC State number was huge. It's a Sunday. It is a holiday. And Duke was involved, the four-letter word there. And then, they were being beaten. And I think people have gravitated to NC State as a curiosity and the sheer entertainment value of watching DJ Burns wheel and deal as the world's roundest, really good basketball player. And then, heck, earlier in that in the day, Purdue and Tennessee did a really good number, too. So, believe it or not, even Indiana State and the NIT, people have been watching them. So whether people are just into basketball right now, maybe they're a little bit kind of stale with the NBA product. I don't know or what, but it's impressive. And yes, the women's numbers are phenomenally huge and do indicate that there is a star quality there with Caitlin Clark, and there was a storyline for sure with the rematch between LSU and Iowa, because that was a hugely anticipated game last year. And then this one delivered with a super exciting, entertaining first half, and then Iowa pulled away in the second half. I don't have just a tangible, yes, this is it theory, but it is really remarkable to see these numbers for a sport that a lot of people sounded fairly indifferent about as long as like a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, there was obviously going into the LSU-Iowa game, there was an incredible amount of hype, and you kind of thought there's just no way, right, that the game and the viewership will live up to it. And lo and behold, both did, right? It was the game was incredible, and the viewership, obviously, unbelievable. I mean, 12.3 viewers for a women's basketball game. Obviously, we'd never seen that before. And I think it beat some NBA finals. I think it beat some Major League Baseball final numbers. It's just incredible. And it was a great game. You know, if you watched it, it was awesome. And I think that we talked about this on the pod last time. I think America loves like the good guy versus bad guy. And I think that's what we had kind of play out there. That's the narrative that we had at least play out there. And you got the best basketball player that we've seen in this generation. I've watched her a decent amount this year, and she just keeps on, Caitlin Clark just keeps on sinking shots that you think no way that she can sink. It's remarkable. And, this weekend, the women's Final Four in Cleveland is, you got the most dominant team, kind of a dynasty in South Carolina. You got the best player in the game. And a generational player. And then you've got the historic powerhouse in UConn and kind of an upstart, a kind of a maybe Cinderella-ish story with NC State also there. Really incredible. How about UConn and NC State too? I think it's the first time ever, right, to have for a school to have their women's and men's team make the Final Four in the same year. Pretty remarkable.
Well, UConn had done it.
First time to have two schools
to send their men's and women's team. Got NC State and UConn. Incredible.
It's become so like it happens so often that we don't even really blink at it anymore. But the fact that the University of Connecticut in this little town of Storrs, Connecticut, in a not a massive state, obviously it's nice location in the Northeast and all that, but that they would have this is the most dominant, this is the most decorated, I guess, men's team since 99, right? Are they going for their sixth title?
Going for their sixth, yeah. 99, 04, 06, 11, 14, or no, 14, 23, and yeah, going for six.
24, yeah. When do they get in the Champions Classic? I'm wondering, there's a lot of teams in that opening champion. I haven't seen them, and the Nets cutting down. And then the fact that the women's basketball, of course, just became, 11 national titles under Gino Auriemma. This makes no sense. Like, it makes sense because we're just accepted that it makes sense, but it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. This should not have happened, and it keeps happening. It's still going. Right. We'll see. Oh, Auriemma's a Hall of Fame coach. Is he able to design something or get somebody to stop Caitlin Clark? They have a very short bench. Can somebody not foul out? Can somebody not get exhausted? What is, Paige Becker's incredible player. And it was like 3 years ago, she was Caitlin Clark. She was supposed to be Clark.
Yeah.
Superseded her with Paige has been injured, and Gino said, oh, Paige, I have the best player in the country. I don't know if you saw this. And then he said after, no, I who said that? Who quoted me? Who misquoted me saying that he doesn't want her dropping 50? I don't know. I think the thing will carry through this weekend to it's like college basketball weekend, four straight nights. And it's a little bit of the, what they've always hoped. It's gotten there at times. I've covered both events, but they're very different. But never with this level of almost equal. I wouldn't even say it's equal interest. I'm not sure that more people aren't excited to watch UConn, Iowa Not saying the ratings will necessarily be higher, but I'm not sure. Like, it's just equal excitement for both sports this weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion about the women's games. It's not, you know, like, oh, maybe I'll tune in. It's like, oh, hell yeah, I'm tuning in, you know? And people are, you know, putting it on the calendar, basically, to say, I'm going to watch those games. And I went up to one of the local bars here to watch the second half of LSU-Iowa Monday night, and there weren't a lot of people in there. But everybody in there was watching the game, and every time Caitlin Clark hit one from further and further away, everyone was going, whoa!
Yeah.
You know, it really is like watching Steph Curry in terms of you just don't see a shooter of this just unparalleled range, and it's, you know, it's spectacular watching her play. It's not, you know, I love Zach Edey, and I don't mind watching him play at all, but it's not the same watching step-back 30-footers. You know, and just flashing by defenders and making these great passes. It is kind of a combination of the bird magic passing ability with Steph Curry's shooting ability. It's really something to behold.
Yeah, I would think that the more anticipated game is the Friday night UConn-Iowa game of all of the both Final Fours. I don't know, like Dan said, I don't know if it's going to do the viewership because it's on Friday. Right, you put that game on Saturday, and it probably does do better viewership than some of the men's games. But, you know, the women's Final Four is in Cleveland, and I was talking to some officials there actually earlier this week. And after the three-point line snafu in Portland, because the court's already laid in Cleveland for the Final Four, it was, I think, last week. And they sent officials in Cleveland, ran out there to the court and measured the 3-point lines, both of them, make sure that everything is good. And it is. I'm happy to report that the 3-point lines do measure accurate and aren't 9 inches shorter, which was the case in Portland, which is just wild.
And no one noticed is what's wild. Four games were played.
Yeah.
Over several games. Yeah.
So that's the thing about the women's tournament that needs to, you know, grow off of this if possible. I mean, this is a sensation. Clark is a sensation. But if that line is painted wrong in the men's tournament, I would think the viewers are calling in nonstop saying, what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know what these, you know, the ratings for Caitlin Clark and it's, the ratings for the Elite Eight on have, and the games in the Elite Eight on have long been fantastic. And we've had these great rivalries. Tennessee, UConn, Notre Dame, UConn, Carolina, and, you know, all the Duke, these great Stanford, these great teams and great performances. But you don't always have it carry through. Can it expand out? That's really the question for women's college basketball. I wanted to ask this. Caitlin Clark, incredible sensation. How, like, when was the last time we saw somebody come along that made people watch a sport that they weren't going to watch? Now, women's basketball is very easy because everyone understands the sport of basketball. But the only thing, the one that pops to mind for me was when Michael Phelps was rolling. You're going to love this, Pat. Yeah. I'm talking swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, and like, they were throwing his race on at sports bars. And the whole place was going crazy for a Michael Phelps race at a sports bar. They were cheering it. Like, now, you know, that's the Olympics and all, but can you think of anything other than that? Or maybe that's it?
I mean, that's the one that obviously came to my mind because that's the way my mind operates. But I think it's true, you know, that swimming at the Olympics was always pretty popular, but it totally ratcheted up to a different level when Phelps became the greatest swimmer of all time. Before that, I don't know. Do you have to go? And that's kind of almost like a single one-off back to when Ben Johnson was racing against Carl Lewis in 1988. Mm. You know, that
yeah.
It's tough. There's not many times,
right? That's
yeah.
Usain Bolt, I think, was Usain Bolt was big.
Bolt
when
definitely
he ran.
No. Bolt was yeah. Bolt was would fit in that category. Maybe Simone Biles. I don't know.
So anytime Serena was playing towards mm-hmm. the end there, mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of look at those. Some of those. That's really you more know, of a sport than an Olympic.
Right. what Tiger did to the golf ratings, obviously, but golf, people always have watched golf, but
yeah,
he clearly distorted that to a different level.
Some of the women's soccer, obviously, when they've made some runs. There's still the all-timer is the Nancy Kerrigan.
Oh, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, right? They hit her in the knee. Yes. It had a 48.5 rating for a figure skating.
Oh, my 48
God. 48.5. It's the seventh highest rated show in the history of television.
We like violence, Dan.
We do like it. They didn't actually fight. Like, that's the, it's one thing like, it's like they just both competed. And then I think Harding's.
Well, that was, yes, after Tonya ordered the hit. Yeah. But yeah, I was in Norway for that. And covering those Olympics was probably the greatest thing I've ever covered. But the anticipation for all of it, it was so crazy. There was at one point a 4 a.m. press conference to announce that Tonya Harding was indeed coming. Because, like, she had to legally fight her way into the Olympics. And when you're all of a sudden, when you're getting something in the media workroom, attention media, the USOC will hold a press conference at 4 a.m. You're like, oh, my God. Yeah. What? This Perfect. Is really taking on something different.
I mean, it's almost, as the Russians prove every year, it's almost impossible to get thrown out of the Olympics. If if clubbing your arch rival in the knee doesn't do it, talk about no guardrails. I think that should be grounds for suspension.
Even Dan Wetzel draws a line there.
Not allowed to hire Jeff Galooly or something, right? I still remember the name. To go club.
Shane Stant was the club man.
Oh,
Jeff Galooly was the organizer, and that was Tonya's boyfriend.
He was the brains of the operation. What a mess. Well, what a ridiculous story. Clubbed old Tonya, or clubbed old Nancy in the knee. That should get you banished, but no, it did not. But then Anyway, let's try to avoid that this weekend. Okay, we do not need anything like that. Let's just play some ball. We did have this controversy, LSU, un-American. Did you know this? Kim Mulkey is now un-American. She did not have her team out on the floor for the national anthem. And now the governor is claiming scholarship should be. Oh, God. Oh, I mean, we didn't have enough going. Let's have some patriotism displays.
Yes, this is all we need. Let's throw in this with the Mulkey story, right? I mean, it's like it just keeps on growing. There's plenty of teams that I think in sports in general, right, that are not on the field or on the court during the national anthem. It's somewhat
of college football.
Yeah,
most college football.
Somewhat common.
College football is this, you know.
Leave it to Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry.
Yeah.
Every opportunist just jumped into this Iowa LSU game, had people coming out of the woodwork with like crazy opinions about everything. It's like, and then they just play. It's funny part is then the women just played this like good competitive sportsmanlike game.
Incredible game.
There wasn't any juice at all to it. They just played.
No.
Yeah. Nobody was yelling. Nobody was pushing. This team's this. This team's that. Oh my God. It's a bunch of. Bunch of really good college basketball players played a game in Albany.
No, I think the audience might have stayed until the very end just to see if Caitlin Clark was going to return Angel Reese's hand in the face, you can't see me thing, you know, or anything like that. Didn't happen. My problem with women's college basketball is that we still have not gotten to the point from a media standpoint of just covering the sport. Everything has to be a referendum, a declaration, a personal attack, or a personal defense against a personal attack, or whatever. There is still too much, I don't know, like stuff involved beyond just the game. And this was a game that deserved to be covered as a basketball game. It kind of exhausts me to a degree, the amount of accessorizing that goes along with covering women's college basketball.
Well, like Dan said, the athletes on the court played a great game and didn't really seem to like buy into the kind of the narratives and stuff that the adults were putting on them, you know, from outside. And that was incredible to see. You didn't have a lot of like pushing and shoving and no fighting and really no like gestures. You really had a fairly clean game that was played really well. And you hope that certainly they can all do that. And yeah, I get your point. I see one side of this too. I see the other side of this too, in that it is probably, you know, arguably the best 2 weeks here run for women's college basketball. And I think there are a lot of people that, you know, want to make sure that is a part of the story and part of the storyline. But I see your point too, right? We should focus on these great players in the actual games.
I think you honor the sport, but it's covering the sport. And
yeah,
I was at a women's Final Four maybe 20, 25 years ago. And I remember asking, Stanford ran a play and some kind of inbound play that really was not very good at the end of a game or something. I don't know. And I asked Tara Vanderveer the question and she got not happy with me. And it was like not terrible. It wasn't terrible or anything, but just was like very, like nobody asked that question then. And I was like, I don't know. Seemed like the play did, like, hey coach, what were you trying to do at the end of the game? I certainly wasn't like, you know, women's basketball is horrible because you can't, you know, I mean, it was just a play. Like, I don't know what Kim Mulkey, why didn't you have, you know, Flo-Jay Johnson covering Caitlin? Like, what point of Caitlin Clark scoring 41 did you think maybe the defense wasn't working? Try something. Yeah. You know, you miss all those types of things. And so you get is either, I don't even mind. I think I'm like Ross, like, yeah, this part of the story is we just talked about is, oh my God, everyone's watching this. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is great.
But that doesn't bother me as much as the discussing the ratings and the interest is fine. That part doesn't bother me as much. It's more the, I don't know, kind of almost kid gloves that have to be worn to approach any sort of critical coverage of the game.
Right. Like, what's your defensive assignment here? Like, she's just absolutely crushing you. And then I think there's like a little bit of like, there was a lot of hype going into this tournament. Like, well, the women's tournament's bigger than the men's. It's more popular than the men's. Like, no, it's not. Or these, you know, this is a phenomenon and it's great. And how can they capture it? And how can they grow off this thing? But it's not, we don't have to defy the truth. Like, it can be a great thing and still just be the truth and go, well, look, this is a great rating, but it's not Harding Kerrigan. You know, so I think there's a little of that, but yeah, I just thought, and the anthem thing was a perfect example. Just people just coming out of the woodwork, coming up with all sorts of crazy things. And you're like, really? Like, that's not a, like, okay, that's what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah. There's a little bit of, as I said earlier, there's a little bit of who the head coach is, right. With that, probably with a lot of this, Kim certainly takes a lot of criticism, and in certain regards, probably walks into that criticism. But it is a little bit of a phenomenon these 2 weeks, because you have you had her right coaching and Angel Reese and then the best player in college athletics, and you got UConn there, the long powerhouse. So you got a deal here. I mean, Caitlin Clark is the biggest thing. Right. And we ought to all take advantage of that. And I think women's college basketball will probably necessarily not, right, have this run. I mean, there's not Caitlin Clark's every year that people want to rush to. So while she's here, man, like, watch her all you can and market all you can. I think it's so cool during the game. You know, the commercials, right? Yeah. There's a Allstate commercial with her. And then I think there's another Gatorade commercial that she's on. Yeah. Yeah.
A couple different state farms.
There are
farms.
A few of them.
I think it's State Farm.
Not Allstate, State Farm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's really cool to kind of see her prop on the screen like that.
NCAA once argued to the Supreme Court that people would stop watching the game if their athletes were in commercials during the break. They literally argued that to the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah. I saw Elliot Cadeau from North Carolina on the Marriott commercials, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Do you think anybody said this? That this is an outrage. I can't watch this.
I know they keep moving the goalposts on like what they said and like, well, no, that wasn't a problem. We never thought that. We think this. No, you literally argued to the United States Supreme Court that this would be a problem. That the people would stop watching once they realized Caitlin Clark is not just your normal senior marketing major, whatever she is. She's probably smarter than that. She's got journalism. She's got to be smarter than that. From West Des Moines. Like they argued that. This is like, so now, you know, they wasted time and money arguing that when everyone else, I was watching with my wife and daughter and they were all like, oh my God, she's on every commercial break. I'm like, yeah. They're like, how much money is she making? This is awesome. Yeah. I'm like, oh, probably pretty good. I don't know what a State Farm ad costs, but it's probably, probably not bad.
Caitlin Clark is the perfect example of why, you know, and I know hindsight's 2020, but why years ago, if not decades ago, college athletes should have been able to profit from their image and their likeness.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Caitlin Clark, although I'm sure her endorsement deals in some capacity will follow her to the WNBA, and she will get a WNBA salary, although those are pretty low in comparison, probably
five with, figures, I think. Yeah,
some of the NIL college stuff. She is doing exactly what NIL in college was kind of made for, and that is to earn the money while you're kind of at your peak in college athletics. And a lot of college athletes move on and don't make a ton of money, even in their pro sport outside of football, in basketball. They move on to their pro sport. And outside of those sports, football, basketball, maybe baseball, they don't make a ton of money. And they can do that in college. And we're seeing that, you know. Olivia Dunn is the same way at LSU, the gymnast. I mean, it's those are great examples of kind of how NIL was supposed to be and should have been years ago. Of course, there's the other examples of NIL, right? Where you have the football player making six, seven figures from a booster collective. So we've got a lot of different things going on, obviously, in the NIL space.
Yeah, it's a wild one.
Think if the NCAA hadn't opposed this for so long, like Tim Tebow went on to find plenty of ways to make money, but how much could he have made at Florida?
Oh, man.
Are you kidding? I mean, of just name, image, likeness?
Every Sunday, just preaching.
Yeah.
Could have had his own church. Just filled Ben Griffin Stadium up the next day.
Right. Yeah.
Play on Saturday, pray on Sunday.
That's right.
We'll be back after this message. Talk a little men's Final Four. All right. UConn, 12.5-point favorite over Alabama. That is a sizable number for a Final Four matchup. Alabama's Ryland Griffin says that if Alabama can do this, he basically says it's like when the Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan. quote, Hulk Hogan was like GOAT of pro wrestling, and UConn, they're a really good team. They're like the Hulk Hogan of college basketball. An Ultimate Warrior came in and beat him. Old school wrestling. I looked this up. He's not specific on when this was, but this could have been either the 1991 Survivor Series match or the 2002 WrestleMania. It wasn't specific, but Ryland Griffin was born in 2003.
I was going to say, I bet he wasn't alive for either of them.
Pro wrestling historian. This kid is now my favorite player. He previously compared Alabama making the Sweet 16 to Brock Lesnar beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Really?
And he's also claimed that Alabama is Randy Orton, who's old school. Ryland Griffin, get yourself a broadcasting career. I don't want to say, I think Vince McMahon's in trouble, but one of you McMahon guys, call Ryland. This is your dude.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting anyone to remember the shock of the 1991 Survivor Series upset by The Undertaker. But Would it be similar that they would, some guy would be discussing it nearly, what are we talking, 33 years later, if Alabama could do this?
I mean, hats off to Ryland Griffin for deep historical knowledge of a non-sport, but that's beside the point.
Careful now. Careful.
Sorry.
You don't need that. You don't want that smoke. You don't want that smoke.
I'm going to say it. Wrestling is not a sport. Anyhow, I'm moving on. It would be a massive upset. Massive. But Alabama still, you know, this is not George Mason. This is not VCU.
Yeah. Little old Alabama.
They were like a number four seed. They were like ranked in the top five at points during this year. So, they recruited a super high level, although this team is, as we have noted, is a bunch of, they're led by a bunch of guys that were transferred up a level. But, it would be a significant, sizable upset just based on the way UConn has destroyed everyone in its path. Fine. If you want the Undertaker acknowledgement for that, I guess I'll give it to you if they manage to pull this off. A 12.5 point spread in a Final Four game is huge.
Yeah, the big question for me with Alabama would be defensively, right? Can they slow UConn down? Defense hasn't always been a strong suit for them, and I wonder if they can play good enough D to kind of slow things down.
I think they got to shoot the lights out. Yep. They do shoot a lot of threes, which would, negate some of UConn's size advantage. You do not want to try to win in the paint against UConn. Perhaps you can if you have DJ Burns or you have Zach Edey, but they don't. I just think they got to shoot the lights out and do it, and then hope that like maniacal Danny Hurley blows a gasket somehow. but I don't see that happening. So I don't know. I agree. I don't think this is not quite Undertaker shocking the Hulk Hogan. I mean, come on now, the Hulkster. The Hulkster was undefeated for six consecutive years, I think, at one point. Pretty good run. Helps when they're right,
because that's what the script said.
Yeah, they're athletes, Pat. They're athletes. Right. That it's not a sport. I agree. The problem.
You know who's going to come after me? Pastor Conrad's coming after me. I'm afraid for this.
A lot of things are going to happen to you. The problem pro wrestling had is they used to claim it was real, and nobody could. I don't know how to say this. Nobody could believe the violence, right? And then they said it was fake, and now no one can believe what they put themselves through, because these guys get beaten up to hell, right? So it's actually they thought it, when it was real, people thought it was fake, and now it's fake, or I don't know, whatever. It's more real than you think. I don't know where I'm going with all that. I'm just saying that this is why I'm not capable of I'm not Ryland Griffin. I need Ryland Griffin on this podcast. See, we'd be doing a lot better.
Impressive.
All right, they gotta shoot the lights up.
But tempo is the only thing I think that can win the game for him. Tempo and shooting the lights out, because Alabama has very successfully sucked everyone into playing frantic basketball in this tournament. And that, when you are a frantic team, you often make other teams play frantic. UConn offensive, really kind of more of a deliberate team. They're 294th in offensive tempo. Whereas Alabama is third nationally in offensive tempo. So that's going to be their only key. They've got to run and shoot like crazy and hope UConn somehow gets dragged into a game where they don't execute, which I don't see that happening.
No faith in them shutting things down defensively, huh?
Zero. That ain't happening.
Purdue's given 9.5. Against NC State. So these games could get out of hand, or they could be really exciting. We'll see. We do have a classic center matchup, though, in DJ Burns Jr., great American, and Zach Edey, great Canadian, as you pointed out the other day. When was the last time you saw a old school pivot, Matt? I mean, we're going to see some Mike and drills and stuff like here. Like, this is... What has happened? Is this Ewing Olajuwon kind of thing or Samson Ewing? I don't. What is happening, Pat?
Yeah, this is like Greg Oden Joakim Noah or Greg Oden Al Horford, like in 07. I'm trying to think. We've probably had some since then. I'm not thinking of, but I mean, we're going back. Frank Kaminsky against Carl Towns, 2015 semifinal was kind of that way. But even then, you know, like both those guys could step out and run things through them at a higher point on the court. This is true, like paint collision city. And I think it's going to be fascinating because I can see advantages really for both guys. You know, I mean, Edie can just shoot and rebound and pass over anyone. He is 7'4" and he holds the ball high. He's been so well drilled and he has learned so well to use his height. And DJ Burns is 6'9" and frankly doesn't elevate. So he's not going to get up and like alter shots or anything like that. But he might be the only guy in America who can move 300-pound Zach Edie off a spot that he wants to get to. So where can Edie catch the ball and then operate? And then can Edie move around and do what he does to get Burns in foul trouble? At the other end, Burns has a way of getting the shots he wants. And Edie is an effective defensive player, but he's never had, I don't think, to guard somebody who could put this much stress on him in terms of post moves. So the one thing we know, there's going to be massive complaining about the officiating. And everybody's going to say Zach Edey's getting all the calls. The fact is, he earns almost all the calls he gets. But there's going to be more attention paid and more heat and hot air, I think, expended on who's getting the calls in the pivot than we've seen in quite a long time.
The last week of just DJ Burns kind of news and memes and things have been awesome to follow. You guys see Senior Bowl executive director Jim Nagy said he had fielded some calls from like GMs and NFL folks about DJ Burns and how he might operate as an offensive lineman, as a right guard, a pulling left guard or something like that, that he's got great feet work and things. And then I think it was either Monday or Tuesday, DJ Burns and then another NC State player, DJ Horn Jr., held like a meet and greet with fans at a Raleigh Applebee's. And did you guys see the line to this? This thing? I mean, there are 500 people in line. It's out the door a good football field length of as far as the line. It's pretty incredible. Awesome stuff with the NCAA tournament. This is what the NCAA tournament does. He's such a great example of it. We talked about it last pod, but DJ Burns just kind of instantly making him a star in college athletics.
They were moving some mozzarella sticks that day at the
potato stones. The
irresistibles. We do during the NCAA tournament, we do get the real NIL, right? Like,
yeah, mm-hmm.
Like Caitlin Clark's on TV and these two, you know, the Applebee guy that they probably went to eat at every Tuesday night anyway. It's like, hey, you guys should come back. I'll give you $1,000. All right. free chicken wings and some steak and ribs or whatever. I'll have it. And all of a sudden half of Raleigh shows up. Yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. This football thing. Okay. He got asked about it. He said he was on Dan Patrick, DJ Burns, junior great American. I think that just comes with our team being trendy right now. They're always finding something to talk about. It just happened to be one of the topics. He says the NBA is the plan, maybe overseas, but he's not closing it out. I mean, this whole idea that just because of his size, he should be an NFL player. Like, he does obviously have great footwork, and he's 6'9" and he's got some size, but you got to be about that life if you want to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he isn't. I'm not questioning his toughness, but this isn't just like, hey, why don't you give this a try? Take up golf. I think you'd be good at it. You know, like you got to really want that. And I found that to be a little.
Well, just the physicality of football, right? The power, strength part of football. I mean, not to say he's not doesn't have strength, but there's kind of a different level, I think, of strength and power and physicality, obviously.
Yeah, you got to be squatting like mountains. I mean, those positions.
Yeah, and bench pressing if you're going to be, especially like if they put him at a tackle or something. I mean, he has prototypical NFL size. He does not have prototypical NBA size in terms of body type. So I wouldn't blame him for, no. I wouldn't blame the NFL for being curious. But yeah, you got to put on a helmet and see how much you like colliding with people and then go from there. But hey, I'd love to see him like at a, you know, a pro day or whatever. And then, you know, if he goes to a camp, and there's been a lot of guys that were basketball players that went to the NFL and flourished, but also a lot who probably didn't, that we don't hear that much about. Mostly as tight ends, offensive tackle or offensive guards, a little different.
I mean, they've brought in like guys that have won the World's Strongest Man competition. I think a guy, Thomas Evans, last year. They brought in, God, one of them was, I think, an actor in, what was it? He was an actor in, what was that show? I can't remember. Anyway, like, they've brought in some guys. Like, they just bring them in.
Sure.
But I don't know about this one. You got to be really, you know, you can't just be, well, Antonio Gates did it. He played basketball. What was he at? Kent State? And then
Kent State. I covered
became,
him. Yeah.
Yeah. Became a Hall of, well, sure. But that's, you know, he also was ready to do that. NFL's a little, it's a big bite of the apple, man. It's a big bite of the apple. So, we'll see where it goes there. Pat, how does NC State win this game then?
You need Purdue to shoot as badly from three as it did against Tennessee. That's one thing that was the nation's most accurate 3-point shooting team going into that game is no longer the nation's most accurate 3-point shooting team coming out. They were, let me see here, 3 for 15, and that had a little bit of flashback of like, oh boy, this is Purdue looking like Purdue in tight situations. But Edie went for 40 and 16. So you need them to miss shots, and you need Zach Edie to be less effective because DJ Burns could make him less effective. And then you've just got to ball out to, you know, to an even greater degree than NC State has in this run. You know, they've had guys, you know, doing stuff that they – really, I mean, they've just taken all their games to a higher level. DJ Burns, DJ Horn, Casey Morseau, Michael O'Connell, Mohamed Diarra has come off the bench. He's 6'10", and he's given them some nice lifts. So they just need everything to go right and for them not to kind of run out of gas. There's a way, but I don't see it as a very likely way, just like Alabama, UConn. I think we have had, I've been saying almost since the tournament started, we are on a collision course for UConn Purdue.
I think it's 9 straight elimination games for NC State that they've won.
Yeah.
At some point, right? Get a little worn down and exhausted.
Let's go for 11 now.
But,
might as well.
Yeah, here we go. When you think about that run, it's quite incredible.
There's a tweet out there that somebody put out as like a joke, you know, presumably a joke at the beginning of the ACC tournament. They're like, 11 consecutive wins and we're national champs or something like that. And now they're 9 in. I found the guy, Thor. It was, his name's, he's Icelandic. I wrote this story. This is how I remember this guy. Funny. I can't remember any stories I write, but he was called the Mountain in Game of Thrones. His name's, I'm going to mispronounce his name and I don't need this guy coming mad at me. It's Icelandic. I'm sorry. But Thor is what he was known as. And he was the world's strongest man. He also once deadlifted on global live stream, 1,104 pounds.
Oh, God.
1,104. And in the middle of his strength, he's 6'9". He was obviously he was an actor later, but Jim Irsay, the Colts owner, somehow saw him maybe late night on World's Strongest Man. Lord knows what Jim Irsay was into that day.
Yeah,
but he was watching the, and he decided he tried to sign him. And the guy said didn't get that far because he didn't want to play in the NFL. he wanted to be the world's strongest man, so he's training for that. But so you never know. And then he became an actor. And I don't know what he's in now, but he was a nice guy. I remember talking to him on the phone. Yeah. So don't come squash my head, Thor.
Did you speak Icelandic to him in the interview?
We spoke English. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's that my Magnus for Magnuson, which I've told that story before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did a shot with Magnus for Magnuson. So I know a lot of Icelandic stuff, Pat. I'm like the Reykjavik correspondent here.
There you go. What do you got on volcanoes over there? Active? We dormant?
I don't know.
One's been pretty active, I think, the last few weeks.
Don't mess with those things, man. Yeah. Don't mess with those things. All right, finish this up. Who's going to win the national championship? Ross?
I'm going to go with the upset-ish. Go at Zach Edey and Purdue.
Okay. Assuming beating UConn.
That's right.
It would be fun to see it happen for Purdue and for the particular people on this team, which is a very likable team, but I just don't see anybody stopping UConn, and they do have the kind of guy who could combat Edey with Donovan Clingan. So I'm rolling with the Huskies.
Yeah, me too. Huskies over Purdue. Should be a fun weekend. And then I'll take South Carolina and the women. My mother didn't raise a fool. You're undefeated.
Yeah. South Carolina and UConn. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be beaten until I see it happen.
Yep. Yeah. Shock it all the way. All right. People's Court. We have a couple of police pursuit stories. I'm not even sure if these are People's Courts. I don't know what we do here. But Albuquerque, New Mexico. Guy was shoplifting at a Walgreens and made a run for it. Only to be detained when a Albuquerque police officer on horseback, a horse-mounted police officer, happened to be in the area and on his dark brown horse was just trotting through the parking lot coincidentally, and they yelled, "Stop thief," and he chased him down on horseback. Body cam video, and he's yelling, "It wasn't me, it wasn't me," as the horse is racing down on him. But in fact, he had $230 worth of stuff from Walgreens, according to the Albuquerque Police Department. He dismounted the horse. Pat, I'm sure you've never shoplifted nor been pursued by police, but how terrifying and what bad luck.
Yes.
I mean, happened to be a horse in the parking lot.
That's pretty randomly wild, because Albuquerque is not Dodge City, Kansas, or even like rural New Mexico. It's a big city, and there's a dude on a horse, a cop on a horse in the parking lot at the time. All right. There's some wild stuff in Albuquerque. I watched Breaking Bad. I saw what happened there, what goes on, but I would not be expecting the horseback cop in the biggest city in New Mexico to suddenly be chasing me down. So I feel sorry for the dude. Bad luck. He didn't have the luck of the Bud Light Bandit, if you remember him, who somehow got out of Dallas with 5 cases of Bud Light. So
go in the doc we have, the show doc here, and click on the Facebook link on the horse. They have the video of this. I mean, he's not just in the area of the Walgreens. You know how Walgreens has like an overhang and then a sidewalk? Like he's running through, he's riding the horse through that. He almost goes in the pharmacy takeout, the drive through. Yeah, this guy should be in the
now.
He should be in the Derby.
Oh my God.
This is amazing.
He's going through columns?
Yeah. This guy should run the Preakness.
This is like something, you know what? This reminds me of something, and maybe the only time I've seen anything like this, Mardi Gras in New Orleans, where you have the cops are everywhere on horseback, and they're just chasing down random public drunks scattered throughout the city.
At the end, there are three horses there. There's three horses.
And this guy's trying to cross the road now.
He's crossing a busy street.
Right into traffic.
Dude, you're caught. Yeah, you're caught. Yeah.
What are these cars thinking? If you're like driving on the road, there's a horse, there's a guy with a CVS bag, and
Be like an exacta box. I'm taking police horse 4 and 2.
Wow.
Eventually just gives up. I think it would just be horrifying having a horse run you down.
Yeah.
This guy just gives up, but these officers are unbelievable.
Is there some kind of other crime they can slap on him, like evading horse cop?
He was arrested. He was charged with shoplifting, eluding, evading police on foot, and possession of drug paraphernalia. The ADP's, the Albuquerque Police Department's horse-mounted unit was working attack plan in the area. Unbelievable. This guy's just like, what are the chances there's going to be 3 horses chasing me down?
Yeah.
I thought I just... I'm on drugs. Things aren't going well. I'm going to rip off the Walgreens.
Pop into the Walgreens.
Probably the lady behind the counter is not going to chase me down. And then you run out and, oh, no.
No, in fact, Dan, up here in D.C., there's a couple of, this is happening in other cities in America, but it has happened in parts of the neighborhood of D.C. where the CVS and Walgreens are robbed.
Too often.
Robbed is a strong word. But, there's so much shoplifting. They just kind of let it go. Let it go. Yeah, and there's no people just come in. In fact, there's a specific CVS or Walgreens up here in DC. I believe it's in a Columbia Heights neighborhood, and basically across the street from the CVS or Walgreens, people are selling the goods that they shoplifted from the Walgreens on the street. So that's where we are.
Come on, man! Like how many toothbrushes and stuff like that?
There you go. Yeah,
99 cents here. I mean, come on, man. Good. We need more cops on horses. And all right, finally, police pursuit. Pensacola man. These are always good.
Start with Pensacola, the panhandle, baby. The panhandle.
They talk about Florida man. Pensacola man is the Florida man of Florida men.
Yes.
Pensacola man was arrested with fighting with deputies after fleeing them on a go-kart. Brian Peterson, 42, charged with fleeing, eluding police, battering officer, resisting arrest, traffic violation. No drug paraphernalia. Good job, Brian. All right.
Hey.
Incident happened Monday, 7:15. According to the arrest, a deputy was patrolling DeLuna Drive near North 57th. Saw Peterson driving a gas-powered go-kart on the roadway with no license plate. Doesn't seem very safe. Report states deputies tried to pull him over. He ignored and kept driving at 20 miles per hour, flooring his go-kart, while holding up his middle finger.
Oh, man, I thought you were going to say, while holding up his Coors Light.
Yeah, right.
And there's a baby live alligator in the back, too.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
He finally got stopped near Happy Shoppers Mart, and he resisted arrest. They ended up tasing him and all of that. Pat, what was this guy thinking? Did he think he was going to get away in the go-kart? Flip him off? What was going on? He apparently was not drunk driving the go-kart, or they would have charged him.
Yeah. But, look. If you're in the panhandle area, you probably were at one of those miniature golf / go-kart / ski ball things.
Drove everywhere. It off the property.
And he's like, he just is like, you know what? I kind of like this ride. I'm going to keep going. He went off-road and then onto the highway. The decision to flip off the cops probably wasn't a wise one, because at 20 miles an hour, you're not getting away.
No.
But... I salute him for at least creativity and aspirational getaway, you know?
Hey, we've all done the go-kart races at the beach, mini golf place, and thought, man, I just want to keep this sucker, you know? So that's what he did.
It's actually crazy that everything in Pensacola is not a go-kart.
Yeah.
They just go-kart like the villages they drive around in the golf cart.
Golf carts.
Pensacola is the go-kart. What do you do with that car? Chevy Malibu. Get that thing out of here. The flipping them off. What was...
Defiance in the face of defeat.
I'm stunned. He does not have a prior war. Okay, if I'm reading this thing, I've read many of these ridiculous stories. This was WEAR News 3, ABC 3. Generally, we get the drug paraphernalia, or there's like he's got an outstanding warrant. He's got like going to get 15 years or something. Like there's a reason to just be so brazen. This guy apparently was doing nothing.
That's amazing. Yeah, this guy does not fit the Florida man profile.
The only thing he was charged with, other than fleeing, battery and officer resisting arrest, and a traffic violation. So his only crime was driving a go kart on De Luna Drive. Dude, you just got to pull over and give up the bit. Be like, look, guys, come on, man. Yeah. It's a go-kart. It wouldn't hurt nobody. All right, get your citation. Maybe they seize the cart. I don't know. Return it to Speedway or whatever. Unbelievable. I want to know more. I want to know more.
This guy seems way too sane.
You got to see the pic. This is not sane at all. He looks the fact that there was not, he's shirtless also. Now, he might have caught us.
Naturally,
might have caught a whooping in the. If you're gonna assault the thing, I don't know. Anyway, that's where we're at. That's our show.
There we go.
Enjoy the basketball this weekend. We'll be back next week, and we'll be back talking more football soon. But hey, you guys seem to be watching basketball, so what do you know? We'll talk that. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, and tell your friends about us, and we will talk to you later.